Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 243, and we're going to talk about perseverance, or is it perseverance? However you pronounce it, it's the one thing you need that can overcome all else. We're also going to talk about your solar panels and how not to clean them. A product review of something that will prevent you from angering your neighbors, which is always a good thing, and a tale from the road involving amnesia. So there! Hey, welcome back. Sorry I am late. I apologize for being a day late. I'm getting ready for this surgery, and it means doctor's appointment after doctor appointment. There's a lot going on, and I apologize. Yesterday was just not a good day for me to do a podcast, so I'm doing it today. I got what I consider to be bad news yesterday. It's not medically bad news. It's just a misunderstanding on my part, is that they want me off my feet for 12 weeks now, which means I will not even be seeing my van till May, and that makes me sad. So I will be dedicating that time to keeping up on the podcast, obviously, and working on my book, which is coming along great. Thank you very much to everyone who contributed to the glossary. That is a big help. And trying to keep my spirits up, because I am really jonesing for some time on the road, and I am not going to get it. Anyway, enough of my personal... Oh, no, there's one more thing. Hey, last week I announced I wasn't going to be on Facebook anymore, and I have changed my mind. I have changed my mind because people presented me with evidence that was convincing. So, not to drag all that drama into the podcast, just know that I am going to stay on Facebook. That means the Built to Go Facebook group will stay there, and I will still be involved in it as much as I have been. And that is that. If you really want to know all the drama, write me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1, and I will send you what I posted on Facebook, on my private Facebook. I'm a little tired about talking about it. I don't want to stay, but I basically have to. Now, perseverance, determination. I've said in this podcast a lot that you need some things to build out a van. You need money, you need talent, you need skill. You need to be an electrician, you need to be a plumber, you need to be a carpenter, you need to be a carpet layer, you need to be an auto body worker, you need to be someone who can fabricate plastics, somebody who understands hydrodynamics and thermodynamics and, well, just dynamics. You need to be a mechanic, you need to be an upholstery cleaner, you need to be a person who knows how tires work and how to... Anyway, it's a very long list, and it's completely overwhelming, and... It's also not true. I mean, it is true. You're going to encounter all these things. You are going to have to deal with all these problems. But knowing that you can deal with them is all that matters. So the basic triad of building almost anything, but we'll just stick it with vans here, is to build out a van, you need time to build it out, money to pay for the equipment, and skill. Now, skill is different from talent. Talent is something you're born with. Skill is something that you have learned. More talent means it's easier to develop a skill, but the talent is variable where you can always work at the skill and get better than you are. Now, that triad there, if one thing is deficient, you can compensate for it with another. For example, if you don't have enough money to pay somebody to do things, well, then you can invest more time and build them yourself. Or if you've got a lot of money and not a lot of time, well, you hire somebody to do it. Or if you don't have enough skill, well, it might take a lot longer for you to do it, but you can still do it. Or you can replace that with money. You see how that works? You can replace money, time, and skill with each other and basically get it done. I mean, that is what we're all doing. We're all compromising on those things. But there's a bigger factor than all of that, and that's perseverance. Because even with those three things, getting the job done is all that matters. And the thing that's going to do that is perseverance. I might interchange that term with determination. They're pretty much the same thing in my mind. And I have seen some amazing things happen with perseverance. In fact, perseverance is the most powerful force that any of us possess. It really is. I don't care who you are. If you can persevere, if you can be determined, you are something to be reckoned with. And I've got two stories that come to mind about this. The first I'll relate directly to van life. I have a friend named Scott. Scott, if you're listening, hi, Scott. I'm going to use you as an example without your permission, and that's all there's to it. We used to go to Dragon Con together down at Atlanta every Labor Day, and we didn't know each other, but it turns out that we have mutual friends, big, huge, weird, small world thing, and he has a van, and I have a van, and we both have Sprinters. You know, we started talking about our different Sprinters, and he, unlike me, loves Sprinters. He thinks they're the best things ever, and he has some basis for that, because he's got a T1N. He's got the older Sprinter before they had all the problems with the newer ones. Anyway, that aside, we got our vans about the same time, and immediately I built up my van enough to travel in, and I've been all over the country in my van. I've done all kinds of things in it. He took a different approach. Scott is much more meticulous than I am, much more of a perfectionist. He has spent a lot of time making sure everything in his van is exactly the way he wants it. He removed all the existing insulation, he cleaned it spotless, and he's been working on plans over and over and over again using 80-20 to build the best rig he possibly can. But now, we're about 4 years later after we got our vans, and he hasn't been that many places in his, and I've been all over the place. But he's not done. He is persevering, and I've seen recent pictures of his van, and it's coming out beautiful. When he's done, he is going to have a showpiece van that I will never have. The point of this story is, we both persevered in different ways. I persevered in not having enough talent or time or a working space to do what I wanted to do, but doing it anyway. I got in my van and I went out there and traveled, and despite the thing breaking down all the time, I've been all over in it. I've accomplished my goal. My goal's a little different than his. His goal is to build the best van he possibly can, and he is persevering with that. He's getting there, and he will get there. Both of us encountered different obstacles, or some of the same obstacles. You know, time is a problem for everybody, but we're getting there. I really thought he was going to give up. And this happens a lot, guys. Seriously, this is an important lesson for building a van. A lot of people get really excited about building a van, and if they have money, they'll just start buying all the stuff they need. Oh, I like that sink, and this wall covering's nice, and that's a good sale on that insulation. I'll get that. And they end up with a garage full of stuff. And then they're going to start the van next week, and then, well, no, there's a party that week, and then, oh, we'll do it the next week, and, oh, no, JoJo's having a wedding, and it gets pushed off and off and off, and then it starts to get cold, and then it's November, and then it's raining, and you go out, and you look, and you see your stuff's there, and maybe some of it's gotten wet, and you're like, oh, this is just too much. I don't even know where to start, and you might make a couple of half attempts at starting and maybe put some insulation in, and you're like, wow, this is a lot more work than I thought. And then, oh, was I supposed to put the wires in before or after the insulation? And then you never finish. And you can find these vans for sale, these half-started vans that people just didn't have the determination to finish. And that can be a boon for you. You know, if you're looking for a van, buying one of these half-finished vans can actually be useful if you know what you're doing. You also can find the stuff they bought for cheap sometimes. There's a lot of brand new sinks and stuff that people bought that they don't use. So the difference is, in those situations, is determination. It really can do a lot. So if you are about to start a van build, the first thing you need, other than a fire extinguisher, is determination. You have to promise yourself that you're going to see this through. You are committing to finishing this project. If that sounds scary, if you're not willing to do that, then I would ask you to take a step back and think about it. Do I really want to do this if I'm afraid to commit to myself that I will do it? And then in that case, maybe what you actually want to be doing is saving up money to buy a finished van instead. Think about that. It matters. Perseverance and determination are huge factors in building out your van. Now, this next story is only tangentially related to van life, but I do want to tell you a story because it was amazing to me. So there is a group on Facebook called the UU Hysterical Society. Let's be clear here. The word is hysterical, not historical. UUs, if you're not familiar with that term, is Unitarian Universalists. It is a religion that has spread around the world. They have an incredible origin story coming out of the Puritans and the Transcendentalists and these... Anyway, they started as a Christian tradition. They no longer have a required belief in any deity. They're a bunch of people of goodwill who get together and have church and do all the church things, but hopefully, and at least from their perspective, with none of the negative stuff associated with the religion. I really like the concept, and I am a big fan of the UUs, though I'm not one. So they created, and this is the Canadian UUs, there's American UUs, there's Canadian UUs, the Canadian UUs created this Facebook group just to be happy. This is the happy place. We're going to have fun here. We're going to promote good things. And that was the purpose of this group. And they had a few thousand members, and then they had, you know, 10,000 members, and then 20, then 50, then 60, then 100, then 200, then 250. In fact, they actually have more members in their Facebook group than there are UUs. And that's kind of amazing. That's a great story. But that's not a story of perseverance. That's a story of having a good idea at a time when a good idea was needed. The perseverance comes in when they realized that the moderation of this group was so overwhelming that there was no way they could keep up with it, volunteers. And they decided to have paid moderators. This is somewhat controversial. There's very few groups on Facebook that have paid moderators. But they were so committed to maintaining the quality and feel of the group that they wanted to have paid moderators. And basically, there's a moderator in there at all times making sure nothing nasty sneaks in. No scams, no really negative stuff. Always maintaining the tone and always making the safe, kind place that it is. But you can see the problem, right? Paying moderators costs money. Where does that money come from? And up until recently, they've had donations. They're actually part of a nonprofit. They've created these ways for people to donate. I donate. I'm not even a UU. It doesn't matter. I think they're doing good stuff, and I donate. But the way Facebook is set up, if you have a group that large, you can't let everybody know what's going on. It seems ridiculous, but they have no way to tell all their members that they're running short of money. And that's what was happening. They can't at everyone the way you can with smaller groups. They can't send an email to everyone. They basically, it sounds ridiculous, but the way Facebook is set up is if you have a group that size, you don't have a way to communicate with everybody. And it was in real danger of shutting down. Many people in the group didn't even know there was a problem because there was literally no way to tell them. And with all the recent problems with Facebook and everything, I was thinking, I'm watching this happen, and I'm like, wow, what are they going to do? And what they did was, the founder of the group, who's a listener of this podcast and has a van and is currently traveling the country in her van spreading goodwill, shall we say, took some time and added one thing that changed everything. And that one thing was determination or perseverance. She spent days online writing threads, explaining the situation in a very open way, talking about the finances completely, talking about why the group needs to be moderated, why it's been such a success because it's moderated, and trying to get past the Facebook algorithm. And by this basically old school word of mouth way, just responding constantly to comments and adding pictures to make the algorithm happy and doing all the things she possibly could to get the word out, she reached enough people that they got enough money to save the group. That's all she had. She didn't have anything else. She didn't have some big, huge donor come in. She didn't have any political support. She didn't know anybody at Facebook who could tweak things. Nothing. She just sat at her computer and typed and made it happen. Pure determination made the world a better place. And I am in awe of what she did. I was watching it happen and I was like, this is not looking good. And boom, she did it. So, Liz, my hat is off to you. That was an amazing thing to watch. And you are a force to be reckoned with. If folks are curious as to this group where this amazing thing happened, the website is the UUHystericalSociety.com. No hyphens, just one word, UUHystericalSociety.com. You can see a picture of Liz and her friends, and you can see their story is right there. If you're on Facebook, you can join right from that page. They also have links on Twitter and LinkedIn, and I know they're messing around with Blue Sky. We'll see how that works. But Yeah. Determination is an incredibly powerful force. So back to van life. Liz is out there in her van right now. She's traveling across Canada in the U.S. in a grand caravan. Not a fancy build, but a very, very stealthy build. And she is doing it. And her being able to do that lets me know that you can do it too. I can do it. But you need to have determination. So, this week's assignment, folks, this is your homework. I'm giving homework now. That's going to make me popular. No, seriously. Take a step back and see if you're willing to contract with yourself, to commit to yourself, to get done what you want to get done. And if you are, live up to that. And that should give you the determination you need to get it done. Hey, special thanks to Gary and Kent this week. I really appreciate the support, guys. And because of you, and because of all the folks who've donated in the past and who are donating on a monthly basis, we'll have no ads on this podcast, and we will have no ads for several podcasts going forward. I hate ads. You hate ads. Let's get rid of the ads, and let's just give folks support for the things they're doing that make us happy. Boy, do I wish bands would do this. I listen to bands. They don't get any money from me because I listen on streaming, and I'm just like, just let me give you money, and I can't find a way to do that yet. If you would like to support this podcast, please visit buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And I will appreciate it, and everyone will appreciate it, and the world will be a happier and more van-lifey place. Thank you. Van life news. Oh, we've got just quite a bunch of news here today, all different stuff. One of them is very timely, and you know, one of the things that happened, the serendipitous things that happened, is because I was a day late doing my podcast. Some of this news is actually from today, so I actually was able to update the news a bit. But one of those things is that the LA mayor has approved RVs as temporary housing for fire victims. I mean, you'd be like, well, of course, their house burned down. They've got an RV. Why can't they live in it? And the answer is because it's illegal. We've been talking about this a lot, and more and more and more places are passing ordinances that you cannot sleep in your vehicle on public lands or public streets. And LA realized that, okay, maybe we need to take a step back here since we've got 200,000 people without homes. It's a very interesting thing. I have an article in the show notes from rvbusiness.com, believe it or not. That's where the article comes from. But yeah, you know, what do you do when you have a bunch of people who are homeless but have access to RVs? Maybe what you should do is let them live in the RVs, except that it's illegal. So take a step back and say, all right, now it's legal because it's not these people's fault that they're homeless? Is that the argument? Or is it just that, oh, we've got so many more? Or is it just that this is going to be temporary? These fine folks are going to move back into homes. And anyway, it's just an interesting thing to look at here. Take a look and see, like, why was this illegal then and it's legal now? I understand that things changed. But is it just the people that have changed and the perception of those people? Is it just the number of people? If we suddenly have 200,000 unhoused people who want to live in the RVs, would that change the law? Because I don't think it would. Clearly, I have a bone to pick with this. But anyway, you can read the article. I'll have a link in the show notes. It's at rvbusiness.com. Title of the article is LA Mayor Approves RVs as Temporary Housing for Fire Victims. By the way, this does not mean you should take your van to LA and park without fear. This is a great time not to go to LA. Please stay out of any disaster areas. Disaster tourism is despicable, in my opinion. This article is, I'm just going to explain it to you because it's going to sound like very bad news. There was an AIDS camp in northern Minnesota. This was a camp for kids who had AIDS, and it's closed. They just closed it. It's gone. And now it's for sale. And while that sounds like a terrible story, and you might say first, well, what the heck is an AIDS camp? Well, kids with AIDS back in the 80s and 90s often were not allowed to go to normal camp. People were afraid of them. And we've learned a lot more about AIDS now. We understand it's not just transmitted by shaking hands with somebody or hugging somebody or hanging out with them or anything like that. But when it first happened, I mean, you know, coming of age in the 80s, I witnessed this, and it was thought of as this dread disease that you could catch just if somebody was in the same county as you. So the kids needed their own place to go to camp where they could hang around with kids and just be kids, because that wasn't available to them. And so these AIDS camps were created, and now they're closing. But the reason is they don't have enough kids. The camp isn't needed anymore. And that is the best reason I have ever heard to close a camp. Kids who have AIDS now, and there are fewer of them, can just go to camp like any other kid. It's not the thing it was before. So it's actually a heartwarming story, even though it's kind of sad. I mean, you can think of all the memories the kids made here, and you know, that's all going to change. But no, this is for the best. This is the best possible reason that a camp could be closed. So that article is from the Star Tribune, and I will have a link in the show notes. The title of it is Closure of Northern Minnesota Camp is the Greatest Story. Here's why. Now, this one I've been talking about a lot. In fact, I just bought two of those very cheap batteries from Amazon that I mentioned last week. They're not exactly the same. I bought ones that had cold temperature protection because that's something I'm concerned about where I live. It's going to be -3 Fahrenheit in a few days. They were really, really cheap, under $130. And I was like, you know, looking at the way things are going, and I need these batteries for a couple of different things, I should just buy them. And they're going to sit around until May because I can't move. But, I'm glad to have them. And this is the reason why, this article. And the title of the article is Trade Wars May Slow Battery Price Plunge. And it's from TT News, which is Transport Topics. There's a lot of little esoteric kind of business-specific things out there, which is good for me when I'm looking for news. Anyway, we are living in a world of uncertainty. If the incoming administration of the United States does what they're claiming they're going to do, there are going to be a ton of tariffs added onto batteries. And while prices have dropped precipitously, and I have talked about that a lot, that might be coming to a screeching halt, and in fact, prices may go up again because of these tariffs. Remember that tariffs are paid by the person who buys the thing, not the person who makes the thing. There seems to be some disconnect on that, but if you make a tariff on a Chinese good and you buy that Chinese good, you pay the tariff because there's nobody else to pay it. So, yeah. What does that mean? I think maybe if you know you need a battery and you have the money to get a battery, now is the time. Why take the chance? The chance of the price of batteries going up is a lot greater than the chance of them going down. And if they do go down, you know, they're going to go down like by $20, maybe, but they could go up by double. So to me, the risk-reward ratio is if you're ready, if you know, if you're committing, if you're determined to build out a van, or if you just need a battery, I would go ahead and pick one up. Great deals right now, and even the cheap batteries are pretty high quality. They really are. So, yeah, I'll post a link to that in the show notes so you can see what I'm talking about. They break down a whole bunch of things. And not only that, not only are the tariffs to worry about, there's the metals involved in making batteries. Obviously, you need lithium, but you also need nickel and cobalt, and those are not typically sourced in the U.S., and nickel comes from Ukraine, cobalt comes from China. Anyway, we don't know what's going to happen in the future. So when you don't know what's going to happen in the future, you look at your present situation and make best decisions you can. And this article supports the idea that now is the time to buy your lithium battery. In fact, sorry to keep going on about this, but in fact, a 100 amp hour lithium battery now costs less than an AGM or a lead acid battery of the same capacity. Now, if you're going to start an engine, you still want that lead acid battery. But for nearly everything else, lithium is better in every possible way, including price. Tech Talk. Back when I had my gigantic motorhome, the 1989 Wander Lodge SP36, really amazing vehicle, I installed a satellite TV system in it. And these are fairly old-fashioned now, but it's a dome, and you put it on the roof, and it has a little satellite dish with a gyroscope in it, and you can watch TV while you're driving and stuff. Pretty high-tech stuff back for around 2000 when I had this thing. But one of the tips for the dome was to clean it with Dawn dishwashing liquid. And the reason was not what you might think. It wasn't to clean it. It was to leave a film on it. It was an invisible film, but it would leave a film on it, and it would make the water bead off. So you wouldn't have to worry about it as much. Kind of like Rain-X. And actually, that was important, because if the water beaded up on the dish, it would interfere with the satellite signals, so you didn't want that to happen. So that was the recommendation. You take Dawn and wipe it on in a thin coat, and then lightly wipe it off and leave it. And so I had this thought, and I bet many other people did too, is that, well, what about solar panels, right? So you don't want rain to interfere with the light going to the solar panel. You would want it to run off, so why not use Dawn or Rain-X or something like that? Well, the answer is, because a recent study has just come out, and it's reported in TechExplore.com, that it messes up the ability of light to get to the panel. You actually reduce efficiency. In fact, a dirty solar panel is better than one cleaned with Dawn or any dishwashing liquid. The problem is that when you clean a solar panel with a dishwashing liquid, you put the dishwashing liquid on, some water, it gets sudsy, and then you rinse it off. It's still there. You can't see it, but there's still a coating there, and that coating actually reflects a lot of light. So the recommendation is for solar panels, just use water, and if you have something particularly nasty up there, use something like Windex or something, you know, like windshield cleaner, something that evaporates, not Rain-X. Rain-X leaves a polymer coating that you don't want. Something like that. And that will let more light in than if you clean it with Dawn. And the other thing I take from this is, don't be obsessive about cleaning your solar panels. That little bit of dirt up there doesn't matter that much, especially if you're running in parallel, because if you're running in parallel, your panels are more shade tolerant than if you're running in series. So, don't go crazy with those panels. Just some water, a wet washcloth, something like that is great. No Dawn. Save it for the duckies. Product review. One of the issues with having vans or these larger vehicles is that when you're in cities or even suburbs, when you open your doors, it's pretty hard to do that without banging into your neighbors. And I have that situation in spades. My parking space that I have now in Chicago is a little tiny narrow space. And I have cars on both sides, and I basically have to open the door of my truck or my van, whatever I've parked there, very slowly until it comes in contact with the neighbor's car. And then I felt really bad about this, because eventually I'm probably going to screw up and put a dent in their door, or the wind will catch the door or something like that. And I don't want that to happen. So I went out and looked for things that I could buy to mitigate this, and I found something that's been working really well. And this is a silicone car door edge. It's a little piece of silicone. You can get it in different colors. There's red, white, gray, and black, apparently. It fits on any vehicle, and it's just a 3M sticker, or an imitation 3M sticker. And you put it on the edge of the door that sticks out the farthest. And it's nice and soft and squishy. And unless you open your door really hard, you're not going to damage the door it comes into contact with. And it might help your door too, because if the person next to you opens the door, they have a better chance of hitting this than anything else. Now, the brand name is, as you might expect, something bizarre. It is Mukzu. Mukzu? Why? Mukzu. Mukzu. Forget that part. I'll have a link in the show notes. But these are $9. It comes with four, and you put them on your door. You just wipe off the door with alcohol, whatever. You stick this thing on there. Mine has stayed there fine, even though the day I put them on, it was like 15 degrees Fahrenheit. It's great. It solves this problem completely. And it also saves you a bit, because sometimes people will come out and look at their car and see a dent and see your big van next to it and say, well, look at you, did that to my... And it isn't you, you know, it could have been a cart, it could have been someone else, you don't know. But if you have that thing on there, you can say, well, actually, I can prove it wasn't me, because look, when I open my door, this rubber part hits your vehicle. It's cheap insurance. It doesn't look bad at all. It looks like it's part of the vehicle. I think they're great. So they come in a four-pack. So then the question is, what do you do with the other four? Well, you can put assuming your van has only two doors, which is an assumption. Well, you can put two on each door, of course, and give yourself a bigger area. Or you can put them on the back doors, too. Or you can just keep two in case one falls off or whatever. Or you can actually put them on your bumpers, front and rear, just to give you a little bit more cushioning. Anyway, doesn't matter. You'll be glad to have the extra ones. $9. Silicone, door edge, guard, trim, molding, crash, scratch, protector, scratch guard for cars, sedans, trucks, SUV, four pieces. I got the white ones because my vehicles are white. Link in the show notes. Not a bad idea to have. Tales from the road. This is another thing that happened. This happened this morning. Very odd. And, I don't know what I would have told you for a story yesterday. But I got an email from a company that makes documentaries for Investigative Discovery Channel. That's ID Channel. You've probably seen that on your TVs. And they want to license one of my podcasts for a show. And it's not this podcast. They're not doing a show on van life, unfortunately. It's an old podcast I used to do called Daily Curio, where every day I would do a curious topic, a very short podcast. It was like 4 or 5 minute podcast. My idea was that every day I'll give somebody an interesting fact to listen to. And it wasn't terrible. It was, a fledgling effort. Wasn't very popular. And I stopped doing it a long time ago. But apparently they're still out there. And these producers found an episode I did on a man by the name of Benjamin Kyle. Benjamin Kyle. And that's Benjamin with an A. Benjamin. So I'm going to tell you the story behind that podcast episode, because it actually relates a little bit to van life. So when you're doing a daily podcast like that, you're always looking for material, and I am not organized, nor do I really want to be organized enough to do a whole bunch of episodes in advance. I like doing them in the moment. So when you're listening to me on Wednesday, I've typically recorded it that morning. This week, not so much, but that's how I did this podcast too. I would every morning get up and do the podcast and publish it. So you would be hearing something from that very day. And the day that I did this episode on Benjamin Kyle, I happened to be in the town where it happened. And what happened, you might ask? Well, I'm in Richmond Hill, Georgia. What happened in Richmond Hill, Georgia? I'll bet something interesting happened in Richmond Hill, Georgia. Maybe I can find it. And I did. And the story is this guy was found behind a dumpster in the Burger King. And I could see this Burger King from my hotel window. This was before van life for me. And he didn't know who he was. He had total amnesia. The police came. He didn't know who he was. He said his name was Benjamin Kyle with an A. Note that it's BK. And he had no clue where he came from. And he basically spent the next 10 years searching for who he was. He lived in a shelter. He did odd jobs. One day he figured out that he knew how to drive. Of course, he didn't have a driver's license, no social security number. This guy knew nothing about himself. He was on Dr. Phil. He got on the news a lot. It's just this real mystery. It's like, who is this guy and why can't anybody figure out who he is? And then in 2015, with his permission, an investigator did a genetic test. Remember, these DNA tests are actually solving a lot of these mysteries and creating some new ones. It's like, why am I not related to my brother? Those kind of things. But in the case of Benjamin Kyle, they pretty much knew who he was at that point. And then he disappeared. The dude canceled everything. He had a website going that he shut down. He stopped talking to the investigator. It was really kind of a mystery as to what this guy was doing. So my podcast that I did was about the latest news of like, hey, we know who this guy is now. It was a follow-up to another podcast I did explaining the entire story. Yeah, now, 10 years after I aired this podcast, a television station is trying to license the rights to it. You never know what's going to happen. And the thing that matters to me about this podcast is that it would be very easy to look at that podcast that I did 200 episodes for. It wasn't a tiny effort. And just say, well, that was a failure. That didn't gain any traction at all, blah, blah, blah. And that's true. I mean, I don't know how many people listened to it. I wasn't tracking, but it wasn't that many. And just, write that off. That was a complete failure. But it wasn't. I mean, if this licensing deal goes through, then heck, I've even made money from doing it, which wasn't really my goal. And it's just nice that I added something of interest that was interesting enough that even if it's going to be just some hokey documentary about people with amnesia or something, it was still attractive enough that they took it. And that kind of makes me feel good. So I don't know that anything's going to happen about this. If it does happen and I can like link you to the show or whatever, I will definitely do that. But odd thing, all about being in the right place at the right time and creating opportunities. And, you know, my bottom line of about everything I'm doing these days is do not be afraid to create. Go ahead and create. Something good will come of it. You may not become a huge star. You may not make any money at all. And you may not even like what you've created. But you've at the very least created a stepping stone to your next creation. And that has a lot of value. So please, don't be afraid to create. A place to visit. Speaking of creating things, the folks in Alberta, that's Canada, by the way, the folks in Alberta, Canada have taken a step that is very proactive, and this was actually, they did this a while ago, and in St. Paul, Canada, they created a UFO landing pad. That's right, folks. Why are we concerned with all these UFOs flying around out there? Maybe they're just looking for a place to land. What if we built them a place to land? And well, that's what they did in Alberta. St. Paul, Canada is not too far from Elk Point, Canada, which is, you know, it's basically part of Edmonton. Lots of little lakes up there, fairly rural, and, well, you know, they're really going to help their population size when the UFOs start landing there. So, yeah, this isn't a joke. This is not April Fool's, and I don't do April Fool's jokes, by the way. When April, you've noticed if you listen to the show, I have never once made an April Fool's joke. I do not do that, so this is not one of those. No, this is actually one of at least two UFO landing sites that are purposely built, I'm aware of. I've been to the other one. The other one's in Colorado. I have not been to this one, but it's open from late May to early September from 10 to 6 on every day except Mondays because the UFOs need their privacy too. There's a sign, there's a plaque, and I will read the plaque. Republic of St. Paul, Stargate Alpha. The area under the world's first UFO landing pad was designated international by the town of St. Paul as a symbol of our faith that mankind will maintain the outer universe free from national wars and strife, that future travel in space will be safe for all intergalactic beings, all visitors from Earth or otherwise are welcome to this territory and to the town of St. Paul. And they built this in 1967. So, big question here. Do they allow overnight parking? Or do you have to be in a UFO? Could you be in a van? Could it be UVO landing, like unidentified van object? Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of a cool little thing. And it's basically this big, it's a big flying saucer on a gift shop. I mean, that's what it looks like. And then there's a separate area for the pad with all these international flags. And apparently they've not had anyone take them up on this. They don't have any UFOs landing. But I still think it's kind of cool. Yeah, okay, it's silly. But it's also like, you know, why not? This is an act of goodwill. And I am in favor of acts of goodwill. So should I be in Alberta in this area, I will definitely go to visit the UFO landing pad. Side note, UFO stands for Unidentified Flying Object. The term is being basically diminished because there are better terms out there for the things we're seeing that we can't explain. If you are curious about this phenomenon, I very highly recommend that you check out the film, the UFO movie, They Don't Want You to See. It was produced and directed by my friend Brian Dunning. It is factual and scientific, and it actually explains a lot of the clips and stuff you've been seeing, like, well, how can that not be a UFO? Remember, UFO, unidentified flying object, This video changes those UFOs into IFOs in many cases, and at the very least explains the problem of UFOs and how extraterrestrials could visit the planet. So this video is available on YouTube and Amazon Prime. I'll have a link in the show notes. But it's the UFO movie They Don't Want You to See. And it's a very, very well-made and informative film. And I think you should watch it if you are interested in this phenomenon. Resource recommendation. I'm very excited to share this with you, especially for some of you. I have been watching a lot of sailing videos lately on YouTube. Solo sailors traveling the world. I don't know why. I really don't have any plans to do this. I just like it. And it's like van life. I mean, I've said this before. Sailing and van life are very similar in that you're in a vehicle and you're living in it. Whether it be a sailboat or a van, there's a lot of similarities. A lot of the same equipment, a lot of the same problems. Well, Sam Holmes is this gentleman who sails around the world, and he does pretty adventurous stuff. Like, he sailed from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, to the Gambia and up the river and interacted with the locals and everything in a very modest sailboat all by himself. It's pretty impressive to see what this guy's done. And I will say, as a side note, when I first started watching, I couldn't understand why he was smiling all the time. He's just like always smiling, and it was a little weird. Then I realized that he has, and the technical term for this is, resting smile face. That's what he has. It doesn't mean he's happy. It doesn't actually mean he's smiling. He just looks like he does, because he has absolutely perfect teeth. Anyway, I've been watching him for a while. I like watching what he does. Really interesting guy. Very, very creative, solution-oriented guy. He fixes things all the time. He shows you how he does it. I'm not actually plugging his sailing channel. I mean, if you like these channels, that's great. His is decent. You will have a good time watching it. But I am plugging one specific video he made that I just came across. And it's called Sam Holmes' Health Condition. I'll have a link in the show notes. And if you are someone with a disability who wants to do van life but is afraid that your disability is going to get in the way, I recommend you check out his video called The Major Health Condition I Sail With. He made this 4 years ago. Sam has a health condition that you might think would prohibit him from sailing. He has ulcerative colitis. Now, if you're not familiar with this is a condition that means you basically have to be near a bathroom all the time. That's the most polite way to put it. Well, okay, if you're in a van or a sailboat, you kind of are. there's a bathroom in the van, there's a bathroom in the boat, so that actually kind of helps. That's a situation where your disability is well taken care of there. But he had to go so far as to have his large intestine removed completely, and that means he had to have an ostomy. Now, if you don't like frank descriptions of medical stuff, you can go ahead and end the podcast here. The only thing you're going to miss is the quote at the end, okay? But if you're curious about this, and I know some of you have this condition, and some of you have been thinking you maybe can't do this, please listen. Sam has an ostomy. An ostomy is basically a hole in your abdomen that serves as a substitute anus. That means all his waste comes out of that hole, and he can't control when it comes out. It comes out when it's ready to come out. That's what an ostomy is. And the way this is dealt with is there are medical bags that go over the hole, and basically when the bag is full, he has to go empty it, and then occasionally the bag needs to be replaced. But he always has this bag attached to him. Always. Even while he's sailing in the middle of the Atlantic or wherever he happens to be. And it doesn't slow him down at all. And it's pretty amazing. This video is incredibly frank. He shows his ostomy. You get to see what it looks like. He's not afraid of it. He explains it very simply. This is what I have. This is what I live with. This is how I deal with it. And here's the entire world that I have sailed with this condition. It's amazing, honestly. I mean, here I am whining about my little ankle surgery, and this guy is doing everything with what to me at first seemed like a much more debilitating problem. But he overcame it, and he's doing what he wants. Now, this video was made 4 years ago. In the past couple of years, he's had surgery to close the ostomy, and he is now able to live his life without an ostomy bag. He still has to make certain arrangements because he still doesn't have a large intestine. They don't replace those. But this guy is living the life. And this guy has what many people would consider a debilitating problem. And it isn't. He's overcoming it. He's doing it. So, it's very graphic. He explains it completely. And it's inspiring. And if it's interesting, there's a link in the show notes. But it's on YouTube. The channel is Sam Holmes Sailing. Holmes, just like Sherlock Holmes. And the title of the video is The Major Health Condition I Sail With. Good for you, Sam. I am incredibly impressed with you. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 243. If you need to get a hold of me for any reason, like, hey, do you want a license built to go? I don't. If you want to get a hold of me for any reason, I am Jeff at builttogo.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. Music, as always, is by Simon Wag. And until next time, remember the words of Phil Oakey, who said, when the best of men take bribes, isn't it the fool who doesn't?